Hey, back on the record, March 14, 2025, 10:47 a.m. in Spring Hill, SEPA appeal. Mr. Gregory, do you have any follow-up questions after mine?
Yeah, just if I may, just a couple. I don't see Mr. Gurney.
Yeah, he needs to. I don't see him in here, so I think he might
Don't
need
see
to
him
rejoin the
yet. Okay.
webinar. So just give me one sec. There he is. Okay, give it a few seconds. He'll be a panelist. There we go.
Hello, Mr. Gurney.
Hello.
Just a couple of follow-up questions. So there was mention of buffers and setbacks and shuts. You understand that the out open air parking in the project is proposed to be pervious, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and so there's no setbacks to pervious parking, correct?
Are these supposed to be questions
It
from
relates. It relates to the
using
buffer.
units?
It relates to the notion that there's some buffer impact. I just want to clarify.
Yeah, this was in relation to my questions, actually.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. Go ahead. Okay.
Just
So,
making the point that under the code, the pervious parking, there's no setback associated with that. That's all I'm saying.
building setback, no, but the it even if it's pervious pavement, it's still considered an impervious surface for the calculations of stormwater and how they impact critical areas.
Well, okay. I don't know about that, but just no building setback was my point.
Nope.
Okay. All right. You're aware, correct, that whenever you fill a wetland in Washington State, you have to either have an Army Corps of Engineer permit if the Corps has jurisdiction, or you have to have an administrative order from the Department of Ecology if the Corps of Engineers does not have jurisdiction. Do you understand that?
I understand that.
Okay, and then you understand that in this case, the Spring Hill project, in connection with the Corps of Engineers nationwide permit, that both the Corps and Ecology have indicated their approval of the project's avoidance and minimization.
I don't know that they said it's not approved. So
Okay, did you?
they can say what they want if, but it's not technically approved yet.
Oh, but from their perspective, they said they have no more comments on it. And our two wetland experts, Ms. Bartlett and Ms. Myers, both said to them that means that the Corps and Ecology approve of the avoidance and minimization. You heard all that testimony.
I heard that testimony. I don't agree that having no comments means that is not the same thing as an approved.
So you're not accepting Ms. Bartlett, Ms. Myers' interpretation of what the Corps and
I'm
Ecology
just
mean
providing
based
my
on
own
their
interpretation.
experience.
I'm providing my interpretation of how those comments are perceived.
Okay, and again, no outreach to Sarah Albright Garland, a Corps of Engineers, right? Just you have not done that.
Not that I can recall.
All right. Regarding buffers, now you and I looked at the definition earlier in the ecology manual that the county is citing in this appeal, which defines buffers as this protective zone in between wetlands and development, correct?
Correct.
I'm going to have
Okay.
to renew my objections. I think he's going beyond the hearing examiner's questions and doing a second cross-examination.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think I'll sustain. Yeah, degree.
But there has been discussion of buffers and how they apply here. But I want to make the point that as to the required 50-foot buffer with this project in between the development and the wetlands, there is no proposed buffer reduction, correct?
Incorrect.
All right. And how's that incorrect?
You're filling a wetland with
I'm
development
not talking
activity.
about that one, Mr. Gurney. Talking about the
You asked
50-foot
me
buffer.
to
That's
answer
my
the question.
question.
Where again, I sustain the objection, and
All
it's,
right.
my
Okay.
comments didn't
We're
really
not
relate to
connecting on that.
direct
Okay. And
answer.
then let's move on to the critical area variance. So there's been discussion of past projects, but we know that Ms. Bartlett and Ms. Myers, with a combined 50 plus years of experience in Kitsap County, have testified that they've never seen a critical area variance required in connection with mitigation sequencing under 19200-230, correct?
That's what they said in their testimony.
Right. Do you dispute that?
I don't know. I don't have that kind of history of and knowledge of all those different projects that they talk about.
Okay. Did I hear this correctly? Did you testify that 19200, 230, the mitigation sequencing provision alone is not adequate to authorize wetland fill? That there has to be some additional exception or permission?
You have to go through the sequence that allows you to reduce the buffers.
No, I'm not talking about buffers. I'm talking about wetland fill.
Is there some? Let me finish, sir.
Well, but you keep going off on buffers, and I'm asking about wetland fill.
Buffers are related to that fill element. So
you're talking about those illustrative buffers.
Connection between the two.
Okay.
So you have a wetland that exists. You have the buffers that exist with that wetland. By filling the wetland, you are effectively reducing the buffers down to zero. So yes, you are impacting the buffers as well as impacting the wetland directly through fill.
All right. You're talking about those illustrative buffers that we talked about last week, which are just uplands before and after the wetland is filled.
That is your term of art. They are buffers.
All right. But my question is there anywhere else in the code other than 19200230 that speaks to the fill of wetlands?
There are mentionings of filling a wetland, but the mitigation sequencing, if you end up having to fill a wetland, that is the section of code that talks about if it's going to be filled, there's mitigation required. This is the ratios. This is how you would do it.
Okay.
But you have to go through that process first to get to that point.
All right. Okay. Got it. And so the word variance does not appear in 19200230. You agree with that?
Does not appear in that section. No, it appears in the section above that identifies buffer reductions.
Okay, and so the very nature of a variance is that you're departing from code. You're not following the code, so you need some special dispensation to do what you're proposing to do. Correct.
I'd like to make an objection here. This was already questioned either earlier today or last week, and I think we're getting further from the hearing examiner's questions on this.
Yeah,
just wasting time.
Yeah, I think it's ask and answer, Mr. Gorey. If you can get to what if you're trying to come up with something different.
I'll try. All right. There's been discussion of a lot of use of the word cost, right? Cost benefit in terms of avoidance. So I just want to drill down on the.
Is this related to the hearing examiner's questions?
Yeah, it relates to avoidance and whether critical area variance is needed and all that kind of stuff.
But you already, excuse me, Mr. Hearing Examiner, he already got his cross examination opportunity. He shouldn't get another one again. This is just wasting time.
I'll sustain on that particular point. Yeah, my like I said, my questioning was related to the relationship between the Army Corps permit and the county review, really, is what that was limited to.
Okay, well, I understood that I could follow up on Ms. Nichols' questioning as well on recross. Did I understand correctly?
We haven't, she hasn't done a redirect yet, but.
Yeah, I did it right before the break.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yes, so yes. I thought I had a more expansive license here.
Okay. I guess to take it in that sense, I mean, that's not an automatic right, but to recross on redirect, but okay. Based on that, I'll allow that. Okay. Go ahead.
I think two more questions.
Okay,
I know.
Okay,
we want to get done. Okay. I just, the notion of the word cost, right. There's all kinds of senses to that word cost. If if you're looking at a technological alternative for avoidance, there's a cost associated with that. Correct. Yeah, and if you're looking at some kind of feasibility as to whether you can do avoidance in a given area, there's a cost associated with that.
It can be, yes.
Right, and then of course, the cost of land is relevant, correct?
The cost that goes into the cost factors, yes.
Yeah, and the cost of money, right? The cost for financing, that's relevant to practicability for a given property owner to accomplish the purpose of a project, correct?
I don't know that extends into the permit process. Under cost.
Okay. Well, when you're a developer or property owner looking to build a project, you have a purpose in mind. And of course, for instance, another sense of cost is the cost to your buyers to know if the project's going to be practicable. In this case, affordable buyers. That's another aspect of cost, correct?
Not that we would analyze. I guess I'm confused by the line of questioning here. Is the county supposed to consider negotiations through private landowners part of our decision models?
No, I'm suggesting that it's up to the property owner to go through the analysis as to what's practicable and what's not. And there are many aspects of cost that go into that, is what I'm saying. You would agree with
I can
that?
appreciate that, yes.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And if a property owner goes through this cost-benefit analysis and concludes that total avoidance is just not practicable to accomplish the project or the purpose, then that would mean that the total avoidance is not practicable. Is that fair enough to say?
I wouldn't be able to say that without seeing the project. This is, you're
Okay.
coming down to the same question again of like market rates and all these different factors coming into defining an applicant, defining their own scope. And by doing so, if they define it as larger or smaller, the county is not some, we're not the ones that are supposed to take that into consideration.
Okay, but we looked at Exhibit F49, which was the applicant's mitigation sequencing and no practical alternatives analysis, correct? The document with the red writing, we went through that.
We did.
Okay, and that it speaks to these issues. You would agree with that?
It speaks partially to these issues. Yeah.
Okay, but just not to your satisfaction. You're just saying it's just not you just not the avoidance is not good enough. No matter what we do here, the avoidance is just not good. You want to see total avoidance. That's your point.
You are putting words in my mouth again, sir.
Okay. All right.
That's
I don't
not
want to
the
do that.
case.
Okay. That's all. No more
No.
questions.
Okay. That mystical final redirect, if any.
Well, I'm not going to belabor points that have already been addressed over this really long hearing, but I did have one question related to your questions on the critical area variance and the I believe Mr. Gurney had said that even if a critical area variance was required, a DS would still be issued. And I wanted to ask a little clarifying question on that to explain whether if an applicant came in and actually applied for the variance, would you still do need a determination of significance? Or is it the fact that they haven't refused to do that process that triggers the need for the determination of significance?
So we, if they were willing to do the variance, we would allow that process to continue. We would not render a determination until that critical area variance process is completed, because the conditions from that process will inform us of the proposal that's here now, the preliminary plat and the performance-based development. Those site plans would need to meet the requirements of that critical area variance. So if we have a refusal to do the variance and that variance is required by code, we cannot issue a determination of non-significance because there are impacts that are not mitigated based on our code. And there's a process that's needed. So if we come to the situation like we are, where it's we're not going to do a critical area variance, we can't, as the entity that's recommending approval or denial, when it says it needs a variance and it's not provided, we can't recommend approval. So if we had gone through the variance process and it came to this conclusion, that would be different. We would be able to use the conditions of approval from that, as well as this process, to render it as something that is allowed by code.
Excuse me. Is this because the variance process, includes the essentially the avoidance and minimization aspects of the mitigation sequencing? And so, if the variance is fully analyzed, then you know that there's the impacts have been avoided. But if there is not
Right.
that
So
analysis, is that what you're trying to get at?
the critical area variance would identify that through that process, we'd be able to understand that the impacts have been avoided as much as possible. So, and then that memorializes it within that permit review process that also allows for further public comment to basically inform and provide a basis for discussion. But ultimately, that variance process, it allows us to move the project forward. And without it, it's not going through that criteria. Therefore, it does not meet code.
Sorry, Mr. Gorey went on. The last screen distracted me for a second. So I think that's all I have for questions.
Mr. Gurney, one quick question for you. You're saying that a variance decision could be issued without SEPA having been completed?
No, I'm saying that we wouldn't issue a SEPA determination for the project before you with the PPLAT and the PVD. We would go to the variance procedure, and that's where the conditions, you know, if SEPA is warranted at the variance process, then we would do SEPA with that. If it comes down and the critical area variance has occurred, we receive an approval and the SEPA is being done on this project, we're incorporating that variance and the conditions of approval to render that determination.
I think variances are actually exempt from SEPA actually now.
I think so.
Okay.
We would go through that variance procedure, bring it back down here. We wouldn't issue a determination of significance on this because we're waiting for that variance procedure to complete.
Okay. All right. So thank you, Mr. Gurney, for your testimony. Ms. Nichols, I think Mr. Gurney was the only witness on your witness exhibit list. I take it the county's done presenting witnesses at this point. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thanks again, Mr. Gurney, for your very helpful testimony. And I guess we go back to Mr. Gorey for rebuttal evidence, if any, and then after that, closing.
No rebuttal.
Okay. All right. So the parties, the attorneys want to break before they make their verbal closing. My understanding is you want to do verbal, right? So we can do that later today, right now. What's your preference? Or even another day if you want a couple days to stew on this.
I'm ready to go.
Okay.
I think we've all been stewing enough.
Okay.
So I mean, a little break I think would be nice.
Okay. How much time do you want?
Maybe 20, 30 minutes, something like that.
Okay. We'll see you at 11:30 then.
Thank you.